Hello and welcome to Essential Dissent, coming to you from the last days of the U.S. Empire. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode is Veterans and Allies Fast for Gaza. On May 22, 2025, a coalition of military veterans, along with religious and humanitarian organizations, began a 40-day fast for Gaza with a news conference at the Isaiah Wall near the United Nations headquarters in New York City, then moving to the U.S. mission to the UN. The demands of the fast, which was organized by Veterans for Peace along with 28 co-sponsoring organizations, are full humanitarian aid to Gaza under UN authority and no more U.S. weapons to Israel. A representative number of people will fast from May 22nd to June 30th in New York, with many others participating around the U.S. and beyond for as many days as they can. On May 20th, UN Humanitarian Chief Tom Fletcher said 14,000 babies could die in Gaza within the following 48 hours. A statement from the fasters condemned the genocide, saying, "We are horrified and outraged that Israel is using starvation as a war tactic in clear violation of international law, and we condemn our government's complicity in the genocide of the Palestinian people." Please note that the views expressed on Essential Dissent are those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily represent my own views or those of this radio station. And now, the Veterans and Allies Fast for Gaza press conference.
This morning, we deeply regret the news of two people who worked at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. We believe all of life is sacred, and arms will ache for loved ones that will never return. And this has been playing out throughout the horrific and terrible months of all of the suffering and the genocidal war being waged against Palestinians. And so today we also have the alarming and terrible news from the United Nations, according to Tim Fletcher, that the lives of 14,000 babies, Palestinian babies, are at risk from starvation. And so could we begin with just a few moments of silence to think of those children, of their loving parents, and hope for their survival? We thank all of the members of the media who have joined us, and we would like to introduce various speakers who are amongst those who are part of the core group fasting here in New York City. I'm Kathy Kelly, I'm one of those people, but I've been so privileged to meet Phil Tottenham. Phil was a Marine, and he is no longer part of the military, and his strong feelings following the death of Aaron Bushnell weighed on his mind. He got to know Mike Ferner, and really, thanks to Phil, we are here today. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Philip Tottenham. I'm a Marine Corps veteran, and I'm a descendant of the old 300 original settlers of Texas, alongside Stephen F. Austin, who slaughtered and drove out indigenous peoples from their land. In short, they murdered and stole. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. But when you wind up serving two masters, you wind up loving one and hating the other. It's either God or country, and after all, God is love. And love is not proud, because pride blinds us. It blinds us from love, it blinds us from humanity. Pride blinds us from compassion, and pride, instilled in boot camp and young minds whose prefrontal cortexes are not fully developed, tricks us into killing people we're taught to hate or think lesser of. And why? Because as the most decorated Marine in United States history, Major General Smedley Butler said, "War is a racket," meaning certain people and certain corporations make money for profit. Weapons companies, oil companies, reconstruction companies, and politicians follow the money. Follow their donors, and you'll find the puppet masters, the gods of war. This is what this country serves, not true Christian values, not Jewish values. And this is the reason the United States has helped create Israel in 1948 by denying Israel placement in New Mexico, Arizona, or Uganda as originally proposed, before massacring and displacing the indigenous people of Palestine. A Palestinian people whose hearts are as big as they can be. They are the most compassionate, most generous people that you will ever meet, just like the Native Americans who helped the pilgrims. They were taken advantage of because they're vulnerable, because of kindness. Every marginalized community is taken advantage of because of that, and that is a strength. And we need the marginalized people of this country and all the countries across the world that white settler colonialism has transpired in this genocide to say, not another genocide on our watch. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I want next to introduce Mike Ferner. And Mike is somebody who has carried his peacemaking values into war zones, into jails, into courts, and he's part of the core group of fasters. He's with the Veterans for Peace. In fact, he's the former executive director and then an interim director. And we're happy to be directed by Mike's moral compass. Mike Ferner, thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, and thanks very much to all the news media people who came out today and others who come here from literally across the country to be part of this fast. I was a Navy hospital corpsman from 1969 to 73. I worked in a Navy hospital, and I took care of the bits of humanity that came back from Vietnam, where our country killed over 2 million people. And that taught me something. Having grown up in the farm fields of Ohio and joining the military at 18, my head was full of John Wayne movies. And after I worked in that hospital for a while, I began to realize what Phil mentioned about Smedley Butler's quote, that war is a racket. It always has been, and it always will be. The few profit and the many pay and suffer. And that's where our tax money is going, and it's a damn crime. Just one example, the citizens of Israel have health care, universal health care. We have tens of millions of people in this country that don't, and yet our aid to Israel helps pay for their health care, which is wonderful. We should all have universal health care. But in this country, the war machine at sucking up the money by the trillions of dollars leaves little left over for human needs. And that is one of the reasons that we are here, is to bear witness to what happens when this war machine is unleashed various places around the world all the time. Right now, we are providing the bombs and the bullets for the Israelis in Gaza to make that genocide happen. And we are here to say, end the genocide. Our demands are full humanitarian aid under the authority of the United Nations, no more weapons to Israel, to stop the genocide, stop the killing, and start treating this earth as though it were sacred and is here to sustain those of us who can live with each other, and we can if the governments, once again, are getting in the way. Thank you.
War taxes. One of the people in our world whose very being symbolizes the option for diplomacy and negotiation and going forward without arms, no arms in the toolkit, is Anne Wright. We're so fortunate today to have Anne with us. She's come from a pretty circuitous journey. Anne was on the ship that wanted to break the siege of Gaza and sail into Gaza. And she has shepherded that project for many years. And that ship was bombed while Anne was there getting ready to board in Malta. It certainly didn't stop Anne. She then traveled to London, back to Turkey, and back over for the massive gathering in London. She's spoken to students in Oxford, in Cambridge, tirelessly reaching out. Anne, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you, Kathy. And thank you for Vets for Peace and FOSNA and all the other organizations that are here to say that we are fasting to stop the genocide. It's one of the great citizen initiatives that people all over the country and really all over the world are saying, I'm not gonna eat any more than what the people in Gaza are doing, 250 calories, that's all I'm gonna do. It's really important that we have these citizen initiatives, but right now we've got not only the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, which Kathy mentioned, that we were in Malta trying to put 40 people on board a ship called the conscience of the world in this genocide, the world speaking out against the Israeli genocide and the U.S. complicity in that genocide. And then what happens? Well, the Israelis bomb it. I mean, they bomb it just in small measure compared to what they do every single day in Gaza. Every single day where we know today that, but right after dawn, there were 51 people in Gaza that were killed. These flotillas and then the marches that are going on. There are now three marches planned to go from somewhere, one of them in Tunisia, the other two in Egypt, and hundreds, if not thousands, of people will be joining from all over the world to be a march to the Rafah border to say, open up these borders. Let all of these, something like 12,000 trucks are waiting to bring food into Gaza. The food is there, the medicine is there, but the Israeli government, with the United States complicity in it, is not letting it in. So all of these initiatives of hunger strikes right here in front of the United Nations and then down to the U.S. mission, all of these are really, really important. You know, Veterans for Peace has been a great leader in challenging the Israeli genocide. We have the T-shirts, Veterans Against Genocide, that we've been wearing for over a year. And now we have veterans and allies fasting for Gaza. So it's important that we as citizens hold our governments accountable, and this fast, which will be replicated all over the United States and all over the world, is a really important part of it. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. I'm Kathy Kelly, part of the core group of fasters. I'm from the Chicago area. And I want to mention that part of the hungering and the longing that will go on throughout this fast is a longing to break the silence, the extraordinary silence of political leaders throughout the world who have managed to ignore the hideous suffering that has afflicted Palestinian people, all of it in violation of international law. And so we are calling on all leaders who are member states of the United Nations General Assembly to fulfill their duty to comply with the international law, which says that the illegal occupation of Palestine territory is criminal, that any shipment of weapons to Israel in this genocidal process is criminal. We are not the criminals, dear friends. We are the ones trying to uphold an edifice of sanity, an edifice of morality. And so let us be grounded in that as we hunger, yes, we hunger for an end to the war crimes, an end to genocide, and life and self-determination for Palestinian people. Thank you. I'm so pleased to be able to welcome Leslie, who has come all the way from California to be with us. Leslie is part of the Code Pink organization, and also each person that she's met here today, she has addressed by saying, can I hug you? So let's hug Leslie, thank you.
Hi, I'm Leslie Angeline, and I'm from Northern California, and I'm part of Code Pink Women for Peace. Taxpayers Against Genocide. We just filed a complaint with the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, part of the UN, a complaint that taxpayers in this country do not want to be paying for genocide. We do not want to be complicit in this. We want it to end. We wanted it to end. We tried to hold our representatives accountable, and the courts dismissed their case against our representatives. And I'm also here because I was part of the Freedom Flotilla last summer. And the most amazing people I met there dedicated to ending the siege of Gaza and bringing in the humanitarian aid. And as they said, the Conscious was just bombed off the coast of Malta in international water, part of the EU, 1,900 miles from Israel. And they have it's outrageous that they can come and just bomb a humanitarian aid ship and almost sink it. So that's why I'm here, and that's why I'm fasting for the children of Gaza who are close to dying. 14,000 children might die in the next few days, so we need to stop this now. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. We're joined today by a veteran for peace from Binghamton, Jack Gilroy. And Jack is somebody who has never let go of the question, who profits from these wars? And Jack is somebody who has recognized that major corporations make profits off of the killing and the destruction, the forcible displacement, the cruelty of wars all around the world, and now most particularly, Jack comes to join us in this fast to end the genocide against Gaza.
Thank you, Gabby. And to start off with that particular line there about making profits, I just want to mention that Chuck Schumer is a New Yorker, and Chuck likes to consider himself the leading Zionist in the United States. Chuck Schumer has an office in Binghamton, and we'll be there next week to start, and in a few days, in fact, to start a fast there and hope that this fast will multiply around the country, not just with Veterans for Peace, but with other groups as well. So thank you, Phil. Thank you, Mike, for putting this together. And we should remember that the American-Israeli Political Affairs Committee, APAC is pretty much behind this whole system. What a deal they make. You talk about merchants of death making money. Well, APAC could really teach them a thing or two because they're hand in hand really with each other. Last year, APAC invested $58 million. That's a lot of money, right? To buy out the US Congress, $58 million. It's on record, it's an easy search, you can find it. But remember your arithmetic from the elementary schools. Remember that it takes 1,000 million to equal 1 billion, right? What a return they had from that. Imagine from 58 million to $18 billion, right? $18 billion is what was given to Israel just this past year. It's that kind of criminal kinds of thing that is going on with the threat, of course, that AIPAC has to destroy any individual who speaks in support of the people of Palestine. The inhumanity that is going on in Gaza now is applauded by AIPAC. We are enablers. The United States people, the United States government are enablers of what is happening. Stopping the shipping of weapons is just one aspect that needs to be done. Opening up the gates to humanitarian assistance for the starving people of Gaza, that is a must. But we all have to work on it, and don't be afraid of AIPAC. Please encourage your congressperson to have backbone and stand up for what is morally correct and right and just. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, one of the people who is a backbone of hospitality in this city is here to sing for us, Bud Courtney. And Bud, we wanna hope for your backbone so that your sciatica won't hurt as much as it has. How wonderful of you to come from St. Joseph's House of Hospitality, representing a band that protests the filthy, rotten system. Thank you, Bud.
Can we just say, this is a song, Rachel, yes, Rachel Corey, yes.
Go. I also want to introduce Anthony Donovan.
That's okay, thank you.
I didn't know he was playing with me.
Sir, if you can move back. So Rachel Corey, these are all her words that she wrote, and Rachel Corey would be the last one to point herself out. She really thought of all the Palestinian people that she was with. So these are her words and a beautiful song by Jim Page.
You know, I was always the one, couldn't stand idly by to watch while the bullies beat up on the other ones. I had to do something to try. But I couldn't stop thinking about the people, that they could be better somehow. Morality's compass, you gave it to me. I still carry it now. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't get it out of my mind. The pictures, the stories, the plight of the people in occupied Palestine. How my government makes me complicit with the political aid that they send. So I packed my bags and headed for Rafah to work with the ISM. And I'd rather be dancing and falling in love. But if I just sit back and watch from a distance, then what am I made of? Mama, these people are so good to me. They treat me like one of their own. They feed me and take care of my needs. They let me sleep in their home. And Papa, their lives are so hard. The gunshots every night. The road block, the strips, search the humiliation. Papa just isn't right. I can feel my white privilege around me. It's here on my American face. I can wave my passport around like a flag, and I'll be safe in this place. And these child soldiers of Israel, they're just like the boys back home. And if it wasn't for American money, I believe these people are alone. And I'd rather be dancing to Pat Benatar. And somebody has to do something about it. And here we are. Tractors are coming today. They're like tanks with bulldozer blades. The name on the sign says Caterpillar. That means they're American made. Well, I am an American too. And I'll be where everybody can see. So if you're gonna run over these houses, you're gonna have to run over me. It's dangerous taking a stand, but it's dangerous running away. Sometimes you have to stand up and face the danger. It's just no other way. I've seen the eyes of a child. It's a beautiful dream in my head. And if I can just make one little difference, I think my life is worthwhile. And I'd rather be dancing, dancing and saying goodbye. But if we don't, we'll see each other on the other side. I'd rather be dancing, dancing and falling in love. And I'd rather be dancing, and so we'd all rather be. And someday we'll all be together in a world that's simple and free.
Rachel Corey.
Rachel.
Thank you, bud.
Thank you.
You're listening to Essential Dissent. This episode is Veterans and Allies Fast for Gaza. On May 22, 2025, a coalition of military veterans, along with religious and humanitarian organizations, began a 40-day fast for Gaza with a news conference at the Isaiah Wall near the United Nations headquarters in New York City, then moving to the U.S. mission to the U.N.
Kathy, if you could tell us what the press conference was about, why everyone is here today, and what's the importance of even standing in front of the U.N. building today?
The United Nations has a tremendous responsibility to fulfill the founding charter mission to eliminate the scourge of warfare for future generations. And we're thinking today about 14,000 Palestinian babies. And the United Nations humanitarian official Tom Fletcher says those babies might die of starvation within 24 hours. Why should these babies be starving to death? They're part of a siege, and to use hunger and starvation as a weapon of warfare, as an instrument of war, is a crime. So the United Nations has to address this kind of criminal behavior. And one after another humanitarian human rights organization has said, we're dealing with genocide. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, scholars who determine at a very high level what constitutes genocide. They're telling us every day, this is genocide. And so we're here to say, end the genocide, end the siege. Denunciations aren't enough. The member states of the United Nations can take action. So we'll hunger for that. We'll hunger for an end to the slaughter of people who are burying their children who die of starvation, or pulling children out from under the rubble, or treating children for surgeries without anesthetics, or recognizing the children have been shot by snipers. We mourn the lives of the journalists, the healthcare workers, every person who has been killed in this genocidal slaughter. All of life is sacred. And we refuse to step away from that embracing statement that all of life is sacred.
Could you tell us why you're here today?
Sure. Well, my name is Jean Stokin. I'm from Washington, D.C. I work with the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas Justice Team and with Pax Christi USA. I'm here because our country is complicit in the starvation of children, of the genocide that's happening. And I wanted to come up for at least this first day of the fast.
Wonderful. What do you think has to be done to stop the genocide?
Stop U.S. Our part with this country is to stop funding offensive arms to Israel. That's our part. We need a just solution. Diplomacy, war never works. There will never be security for the Israeli people unless there's justice for the Palestinians. Mm-hmm.
In Belgium this past week and in the Netherlands, hundreds of thousands of people gathered in protest to the genocide. That is not happening in the United States. Is there some reason for that?
I don't know how we're going to wake people up. It's just unimaginable why eyes can't open to the reality. The mainstream media doesn't project the reality of this genocide, so I don't know what it will take. We have to keep trying.
Mentioning Christianity, I went to Catholic schools, for example, and I do wonder, you know, if churches, all churches, Christian and Catholic, etc., are doing their job to teach compassion, or can compassion not be taught?
We have to find a way to break the hearts of all people. I mean, that whether it's the stories, the pictures, we have to. I mean, fortunately, we have not even a new pope, but the last pope each day calling to the pastor in Gaza. Compassion is the only way that's going to bring understanding and peace.
Kathy Boylan of the Catholic Worker in Washington, D.C., has requested that Pope Leo XIV go to Gaza. Have you any reaction to that?
Yes, Kathy's a friend, so I know, and I know she tried for Pope Francis too. Everyone should. I mean, we have to go touch the wounds. You know, I mean, a pope would bring attention to it, so that would be a great opportunity, but it's a great idea. We can pray for it to happen.
Thank you, Jean. Thank you very much.
Thank you for all you've done over the years.
Would you like to say a few items?
I don't think I can add to anything that Jean just said, although I will say that as far as that last question, I frankly was one of the people who did not think that it was anyway reasonable to expect Pope Francis in his health and age to go. But I'm all for saying to Pope Leo, go. He's got the health and the youth, in a sense. As somebody said recently, he's the first pope that's younger than I am.
Ah, Rosemary Pace admitting to a bit of her age, but also, you know, a dedicated Pax Christi person for decades. Rosemary, you know, what, besides the pope going to Gaza, what sort of other actions of the American people or the American government can be taken to stop the starvation, stop the genocide?
That's such a, Jean just said, we wish we really knew. I mean, we're doing what we do, whether it's standing here or whether it's making phone calls, signing petitions, you know, doing rallies, demonstrations, et cetera. And they are happening in small groups, I think, all over the country. It's not that they're not happening. And there seems to be something happening every day. But, I mean, everywhere, both every day and everywhere. But I think one of our biggest hurdles is the media. The media just keep breeding the same one-sided message that it's all Israel. We hear about Israel is the victim and Hamas is the cause, and history doesn't go beyond October 7th, 2023. You know, nobody's looking at every day, week, month, and year going all the way back to 1948. And we were also just talking before you came over about the two people who were killed coming out of some Israeli celebration. It wasn't the Israeli embassy, but they worked for the Israeli embassy in Washington. And I mean, what a horror that these young people were killed. It's a young couple that were about to get engaged. But right away, what happened to them is being blamed on anti-Semitism and not a reaction to what's happening in Gaza. And I think all of us here, certainly I personally believe that if Israel would stop leveling Gaza to rubble, the whole conflict could end between the U.S. arming it and breeding the propaganda, and Israel itself just refusing to take any kind of responsibility. I mean, I constantly hear it's all Hamas's fault. And Hamas apparently is really pretty awful. There's no way to defend Hamas from what I understand about Hamas. But Hamas is a small entity compared, and certainly doesn't have the weapons or the money that Israel has, because Israel has the weapons and the money from us, the U.S. So, you know, it's a one-sided argument. It's a one-sided conflict. And it's just...
Is it kind of based, do you think, Rosemary, on the attitude that Americans, for some reason, I don't know the answer, maybe you do, it's very simple, very simple. Arabs bad, Israelis good.
Yeah, well, that's certainly what we've been taught from, you know, childhood. Not necessarily Arabs bad or Muslims bad, let's say, although there is too much of that, but... Just in general, we grow up hearing about how wonderful the state of Israel is, the one democracy in the Middle East, how wonderful it was that the state of Israel was created after World War II, without any real knowledge about what this has meant to the Palestinians. I think a lot of people still believe a land without a people for a people without a land, you know, without recognizing that there was a whole population there, and they're still there, and they're trying to stay. And they're being starved or killed or left without health care to get rid of them. You know, and that's certainly my perspective. You know, it's certainly not the perspective that Israel wants us to believe.
Alan, could you just tell us in a few words or as many words as you want to say why you're here? Today?
Well, I'm here because there's a genocide going on, and how can you stand and watch? The world is standing and watching. You can't stand by. You have to come out and do something. And I actually traveled to the West Bank. I've never been to Gaza because I've been unable to gain entry because Israel has had it blocked off since 2008. Mm-hmm. But I've been in the West Bank, and I have seen the apartheid conditions there, and I have been welcomed beautifully with the hospitality of the Palestinians, even though my country is supporting the forces that oppress them. And when you meet those people and you see their steadfastness, that's the word they use all the time, sumud, steadfastness in the struggle for their liberation and the peaceful, the amazing, creative, peaceful, nonviolent work that they do and the ways that they, creative ways that they find to get their message out. You have to be out here. People are getting killed. Babies are dying. You have to be out here. That's why.
Maybe you have some perspective on this. We've been watching in Europe where there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands at times, of people who come out and protest this starvation, this genocide. And yet, it doesn't seem to happen here in the very country that could do the most to stop it.
That is a sad conundrum, and I think they're two reasons. One is that the media here is really kind of captive to the myth of the victimization of Israel, that Israel is always the victim no matter what, and they've weaponized anti-Semitism to such an extent that people who speak out against it get branded as anti-Semites, and then their message does not get out with any credibility. That's why I also, as a Jew, I feel it's especially important to be out here.
But that amazes, you can name, you know, so many people, but yet their voices, why aren't they on NBC and CBS and NPR, et cetera?
Money. People are making money. The weapons manufacturers are making money. You know, all of the aid that we give to Israel is also just a way of taking the money out of the taxpayer pocket here and putting it in the hands of the weapons manufacturers. It's almost a direct line of where that money goes.
The merchants of death.
The merchants of death that you've been working on. Yeah, exactly. So that's one reason it's money. And then a lot of the mainstream media is owned by the same mega corporations that are profiting from this stuff.
Hi, my name's Anthony Donovan. Thank you very much for coming here, and thank you whoever's listening and watching. We are all here because our hearts are broken for 19 months, really broken. We cannot stand what we're seeing. And there's an image I have that I got the week after October 7th. I saw a little girl coming out of rubble in Palestine. Don't know where, but this is just a week after October 7th. Her house, wherever she was in, was blown up. This girl was barefoot. She was carrying a cat in her arms, wrapped in her arms, a big fluffy cat who was just staring up at her in shock, really. And she was just walking through the rubble in her bare feet, holding this cat with such love and care and trying her best to protect this cat. There were no family members, no one around her, just walking by herself. She was just concerned getting this cat to safety. That's humanity, that caring that that little five-year-old is capable of, we're all capable of. And she just touched my heart and opened my heart so much. So I'm here with her in my heart right now. And this is for all the many hundreds of thousands of people that have lost their lives. So this sign was made that month, October 2023. We've been standing here in front of our US UN mission since then, every Thursday, sometimes other days if we know there's an event, but every Thursday for 19 months, we've stood in front of our US mission, because it's been very clear from the start that this was disproportionate and indiscriminate killing by my country was supporting, that we were complicit in this. Israel cannot do this without my country. So we feel that we have a responsibility. And we, as a citizen, and I was raised to partake in citizenship, to take democracy, whatever's left, seriously. So it is our responsibility to be here. And this killing is our responsibility. This killing is our killing. This genocide is our United States genocide. So that's why we're here. The Veterans for Peace are a group. I'm an associate member for 2 decades of Veterans for Peace. They're definitely one of my favorite people in the world. They've seen war. They've seen what war does to people, to habitat. And we've had many actions against wars, against nuclear weapons, and so we've come up with many ideas. They had a peace walk from Maine to Washington, D.C. last year in July. Took over a month. They walked the whole way with a Palestinian flag, but we talked in churches, in community centers all along the way, and we talked about the complicity of our nation in this murder, and we called it that. We called it genocide. It was clear to us that this was genocide. And by the way, that was led by 2 Jewish Veterans for Peace. We are, none of us here are anti-Semitic. None of us ever will be anti-Semitic. I certainly will never be anti-Semitic. We love everyone. So, and we're doing this for everyone. I don't know quite what else to say, but there's a very important event happening here, June 17th and June 20th. Maybe get a hold of the Palestinian mission about this, but the UN will be meeting about Palestinian statehood. And it's the first time they've gathered so seriously to take on the question of Palestinian statehood. Are we gonna do this or are we not? Stand up and be counted. What are you gonna do as a nation? They're gonna ask all 192 nations, what are you gonna do? It's going to be a very important event, and we all need to support this development. It's enough. We have lots of resolutions that have called about the settlements, pulling back, stopping the settlements, but they have done nothing but move forward and steal more and more land. And a lot of these settlers are from right here, New York City, my city. I'm a 5th-generation New Yorker. So it's not right. Get back here. Take care of your own. Stop stealing land. Stop killing people.
And here we have Mike Ferner of Toledo, Ohio. But Mike, you're holding the flag here for Veterans for Peace. You've been the director for Veterans for Peace for years, and now your role is something like special projects. Is this a special project?
Well, this is about as special as you could get. Yeah. I'm no longer on the staff and obviously no longer the director, but I'm active with the organization and got a hold of a lot of the people that I've met over the years working in Veterans for Peace, including people like Jack Gilroy and Phil Tottenham, the 47-year-old former Marine who I just bumped into in Toledo, came up with the idea and said, is this something that we can do? And frankly, I didn't have a lot of hope that it would happen, but just started talking to people and boy, before you know it, it started taking off.
Yeah.
So this has just been one of the best things I've worked on with Veterans for Peace.
Yeah, we're all proud of you, really, what you've been doing here. And I thought that conference that you just had right down the street was good. Now, what about getting this concept that you and Phil and others have come up with to become a national kind of thing, not just with Veterans for Peace, but with other organizations as well?
We are hoping, and not just hoping, but contacting and getting back to people who contact us and any organization. 28 or 30 organizations have co-sponsored this or endorsed this, and we are getting the message to them constantly to please, get some people wherever you are. It doesn't matter where you're at in the United States or the world. We have somebody in Australia that's doing it. This is something people can do wherever they are, and their organization can help spread that across the country, if it's a church or a social group or whatever it happens to be. So we are always very, very willing and eager to have other organizations. You know, Pax Christi has endorsed it, and I can't think of the names of other organizations, Friends of Seville, North America, who've been very helpful in putting this together. So we're hoping that more organizations will jump
in. It would be great if an active organization that I really admire greatly is Code Pink.
Oh, absolutely.
You have Code Pink and Peace Action. They often say they're the largest peace organization in the country. I think it's about time for them to jump in and start doing some action.
To have some action.
In Veterans for Peace, right.
That would be great.
Yes, more action, right?
Yeah.
As long as they're for peace. But
It's in their name.
Yeah, it's in their name. Mike, what do you foresee happening here in 40 days? Are you going to be a member of you just out of the hospital not too long ago, right? Are you actually going to be one of the fasters?
I am, and I wasn't in the hospital. I got prostate cancer, and I had radiation, and I'm on drug therapy for it. But I'm feeling good, and I think I can do this, and I'm going to do it for as many days as I can. Kathy Kelly roped me into a fast several years ago for 35 days, and that was water only. So we've got this 250 calorie maintenance drink that one of our members came up with. And if I tasted it for the first time this morning, I'm going to have to get used to it. But it's supposed to be good for you. And it's 250 calories. So I'm hoping I can do the whole thing.
Well, that's great. Kathy Kelly, for example, you had her, you asked Kathy to sort of start the press conference this morning. You know Kathy from Iraq, right? Didn't you meet her in Iraq? And Kathy herself has been on long fast.
Yeah.
Now, you guys, as you get a little bit older, I don't want to be fatherly about this, but don't you have to really watch your health when you do that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm taking my blood pressure every day, and, I know if my body starts talking to me, I better listen.
So people around the country don't necessarily have to be doing the 40-day fast
not
as you
all.
Do.
Not
what
at all.
What are some examples of
well,
what
people
they do?
Are doing Ramadan fasts, fasting from sun up to sundown. They're doing a couple, two or three days a week. One of the things that is starting to happen around the country is that people are contacting their friends and saying, look, they're doing this in New York for 40 days. Can we get 10 of us together and do it for 4 days apiece or something? You know, however they come up with it. And that gives them an opportunity to organize and have something in common with what we're doing here and yet not have to leave home.
Right, okay. In Binghamton, New York, for example, they're taking the day of Thursday to do a fast, and they'll do it from, to try to draw attention, quite frankly, to try to somehow or another puncture the, you know, the apathy that seems to exist in the country and get onto television, get on into the media, because simply having cars drive by may not do an awful lot. So what we try to do in Binghamton and encourage other people would be to use whatever media you can. What about other chapters around the country? Do you foresee that people will be taking a day of the week or maybe just abstaining from certain foods? Or
what? Well, it'll take a lot of different forms. Right now, we're in the first day, and it's got thrown together pretty quickly. So I can't give you much of a report of what exactly chapters are doing around the country. But the word is definitely getting out. I mean, we have, I don't know, 400 people around the country who have signed up to participate in this at some level or another. And those numbers have just been expanding rapidly just in the last couple of days. So, and plus with the students that are doing this around the country in a number of places, students are on fasts. And we have just begun to connect with them, but we hope to be in touch with them better and share our experiences and let the media that we get here know what the students are doing and vice versa.
That whole idea of anti-Semitism is probably going to perk up today because of the two killings in Washington, D.C. What are your thoughts about this and anti-Semitism? Have you ever had that as an issue with Veterans for Peace?
It's come up here and there, not nearly as much as it has in the universities. But of course, you know, the leaders of a totalitarian government always want to come down hard on intellectuals and universities and students. So I think they're getting a good dose of it. And of course, you know, the Palestinian and Arab American community, government's using it to stomp on people's rights to speak any way they can.
Palestinians are Semitic people. And yet, you know, the violence against Palestinians doesn't seem to draw that concept, does it?
Well, it's racism. It's racism in this country. The life of these two people from the Israeli embassy who were killed yesterday. Kathy started the program by asking for a moment of silence to remember them, and that they're going to have loved ones with empty arms back home, as are hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are facing the same thing. This violence that the United States is the number one perpetrator of in the world, with the number of dollars going into weapons and the number of more weapons expenditures than the next seven or eight countries put together and all that, it ripples out like in a pond. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it affects people as it goes out that are very far from the center of the violence. And it touches lots of people. And now it has touched these two people that were at the Israeli embassy. And it's this country is shoot first and ask questions later, and doesn't rely on diplomacy. And the violence that we invest in this country and so around the world causes just such immense suffering, and it's going to come back and affect us too. We're not going to be immune from it.
What's your take on that? Hamas is consistently said to be a terrorist organization. This is what Netanyahu and the Israelis, etc. Would you say that Israel is a terrorist nation?
Well, I got into a discussion with somebody right after October 7th happened, and I started talking about genocide, and they said, well, what Hamas is doing is the same thing. I said, well, okay, let's look at this. Which side has got the capability to make it stick? What Hamas did as a member of Veterans for Peace, I can't condone, but the reaction has been just so horrific. And that's what we're focusing on, is to stop this genocide. It's breaking our hearts, literally. And we just want to do something. Phil, the Marine vet that got this started, said he wanted to He said he wanted to do what Aaron Bushnell did, but he didn't have the courage.
Wow.
So, he said, we got to do something really significant.
Chris Hedges, stated that the only way it's going to end is a massive mobilization and probably some direct action. Doesn't seem to be that way, does it? You know, not in this country.
It's hard to wake people up. You know, there are just lots and lots of good people who care, who care. Some people are active. And what we're hearing is this fast from hundreds and hundreds of people is they're glad that it's happening, giving them something to be involved in. So we hope this is people take advantage of it and get involved. And we need to be doing a lot more. I mean, I hope through this 40 days, we can make some plans to talk with the people that are working on this all over the country and say, okay, 40-day fast is over. Let's start occupying congressional offices. Let's start doing whatever it takes to throw a wrench in the works until we get some sanity.
And eventually a general strike if that's necessary. But Mike, thank you very much. And I'm proud of the fact that you stand very tall in midst of a Veterans for Foreign Wars in American Legion who may not totally accept what you're up to. But do you see any cracks there? Do you think
a little bit. I mean, I've had conversations. I mean, nothing formal, but just conversations that I've had. And always leave with the sentiment expressed by myself and the other person I'm talking with from one of those organizations of respect. You know, and so, you know, I guess that's where it starts. And, you know, we stress the fact that whether you're VFW, American Legion, or any one of those organizations that are traditionally pretty conservative and pretty supportive of the military, you know, really think about where is your money going and why doesn't your family and all your neighbors have health care in this country?
Right.
You know,
right.
Why aren't right. students able to go to college for free? And so where is that money going? And I think if you talk to people in those sorts of ways that they understand that they're not getting a very good deal out of their taxes.
You may have more in common than they realize. That
absolutely.
Whole group.
You've been listening to Essential Dissent. This episode was Veterans and Allies Fast for Gaza. On May 22, 2025, a coalition of military veterans, along with religious and humanitarian organizations, began a 40-day fast for Gaza with a news conference at the Isaiah Wall near the United Nations headquarters in New York City, then moving to the U.S. mission to the UN. The demands of the fast, which was organized by Veterans for Peace along with 28 co-sponsoring organizations, are full humanitarian aid to Gaza under UN authority, and no more U.S. weapons to Israel. On May 20th, UN Humanitarian Chief Tom Fletcher said 14,000 babies could die in Gaza within the following 48 hours. A statement from the fasters condemned the genocide, saying, "We are horrified and outraged that Israel is using starvation as a war tactic in clear violation of international law, and we condemn our government's complicity in the genocide of the Palestinian people." Please note that the views expressed on Essential Dissent are those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily represent my own views or those of this radio station. I'm Wilton Vaught, saying thanks for listening, and remember, never believe anything until you hear the official denial.